Kale and Company, weekday mornings, 6 till 10.
We were very excited last evening. A lot of coverage, national coverage, local stations taking live the headline that we would have indeed a ceasefire deal. The hostages would be coming home. And, of course, we all here thought of President Trump, who had been talking about, you know, what was that, a week ago from Mar-a-Lago?
Hell to pay.
As he was saying, yes, there will be hell to pay. They better get her done. He sent his own envoy. So that was the great news and a lot of celebration, and we learned more about the hostages. However, we're hearing about this last-minute crisis this morning with Hamas reportedly holding up the Israeli approval of this deal that they talked about, that you may have heard about before you went to bed last night, to pause the fighting in the Gaza Strip, release the hostages. So Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying this morning that it's a last-minute crisis with Hamas holding up the Israeli side of the approval on this.
Yeah, delaying the vote, apparently, to approve of the ceasefire deal.
So we know that Netanyahu's office at his cabinet will not meet to approve the deal until Hamas backs down, accusing it of reneging already on parts of the deal, the agreement, in an attempt to gain further concessions.
Mm-hmm. We'll go into it. I've got a couple of very good articles for 6:30 and some sound bites on the whole development from yesterday, and obviously now a little bit of a 23rd hour curveball thrown in here.
Yeah, so, you know, the deal would have taken effect Sunday. I don't have word if it's too soon, I think, because Netanyahu, I mean, obviously it's, you know, it's daytime there. We're in the wee hours of the morning.
Yep.
Hope to God they get this
1:05 p.m. currently in Tel Aviv.
So nearly 100 people still captive, still considered captive in Gaza. Israel military, the military there believes at least a third are dead. And I've reported that to you many times tragically before. Three-phase deal would have begun with the release of 33 women, children, and older adults, and then wounded civilians in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian women and children, they say, are imprisoned by Israel. So soldiers and other men would be released in that second phase. So, you know, we'll have all the audio, and I know many people waking up and hearing this for the first time on Kale & Company probably went to bed very hopeful.
Yes. Although, you know, I will say, rolling out the first phase will take 6 weeks. I mean, what do you mean rolling out the first phase? What is this, the COVID vaccines from 4 years ago? We're going to roll them out over the course of the next couple of months? What do you got to roll out over 6 weeks?
You think this is easy?
100 people?
You know what?
Go, run.
I think it'll get easier.
Jump in that truck and don't
20th.
Look back.
It'll get easier on January 20th. That's what I know. We'll get into Biden's farewell address. And, of course, President Biden, he is the president, and he is taking full credit, even though perhaps not everybody's giving him full credit, but he's taking full credit for this ceasefire deal.
Mm.
So, you know, we'll see if anything changes.
He is, but his staff and his crew is not.
Yeah, I've got that clip for the bottom of the hour. It's kind of interesting.
So the farewell address, if you missed it last night, don't worry. It's on Greg's cut sheet. The farewell address to the nation. Not everybody delivers one of these farewell addresses, less than a dozen times in our nation.
Well, not everybody delivers in general.
And a lot of people remarking, even though the very end of the speech was, you know, talking about his wife and his staff, I think nobody even practically heard the last part, because the beginning part warning us about the oligarchy, the oligarchy of the ultra wealthy.
Can you play this film?
Holy moly.
Cut 19. This is the clip that everybody is talking about this morning. Cut 19 with the oligarchy taking shape in America, talking about big tech.
Together for the American people. And I wish the incoming administration success, because I want America to succeed. That's why I've upheld my duty to ensure a peaceful and orderly transition of power, to ensure we lead by the power of our example. I have no doubt that America's in a position to continue to succeed. That's why my farewell address tonight, I want to warn the country of some things that give me great concern.
Mm.
This is a dangerous concentration, and that's a dangerous concentration of power.
What?
In the hands of a very few ultra-wealthy people.
Mm.
the dangerous consequences if their abuse of power is left unchecked. Today, an oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth, power, and influence that literally threatens our entire democracy, our basic rights and freedoms, and a fair shot for everyone to get ahead. We see the consequences all across America, and we've seen it before. More than a century ago, but the American people stood up to the robber barons back then and busted the trusts. They didn't punish the wealthy. Just made the wealthy play by the rules everybody else had to.
Like your
workers
kid.
Want rights to earn their fair share. You know, they were dealt into the deal and helped put us on a path to building the largest middle class, the most prosperous century any nation in the world has ever seen. We've got to do that again.
Not a joke.
The last 4 years, that is exactly what we've done. People should be able to make as much as they can.
Yeah. Yeah. Very rich last night, by the way. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm assuming the ratings will come out for the viewership for that speech last night. I think Americans have just completely forgotten about Joe Biden. I think he's an afterthought at this point. I really do. I mean, since almost the moment that Kamala was installed after that night, after that debate on June 27th, I don't think people even think about Joe Biden, and they haven't thought about him in probably 3 months. Just me trying to read the
room. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have all of it moving forward. A story that we had talked a lot about at the time, a real tragedy involving the murder of a Philadelphia police officer. We have this important update this morning, and it's two men pleading guilty to murder and racketeering charges. This takes us back to March of 2020, the murder, the shooting death of a Philadelphia police officer. So in this case, this is the killing of SWAT Corporal James O'Connor IV. You remember this story very well, Greg. This is 26-year-old Hassan Elliott, 23-year-old Khalif Sears. They admitted to killing Corporal James O'Connor IV on that Friday, March the 13th, 2020. Police were trying to arrest these guys in connection to a 2019 murder. And as police climbed an interior stairwell at Elliott's apartment on Bridge Street there near Duffield Street, he fired a dozen shots through a wall, striking Corporal O'Connor in his neck as well as his arm. So Sears and two others were arrested inside. Federal prosecutors say they were part of a gang. These guys were part of this gang that had shot a dozen people, killing three people as they sought to control drug sales, by the way, in the city's Frankfurt section. So the plan is to recommend that these guys get up to 75 years behind bars, and especially Elliott and Sears as his co-conspirator, serving up to 50 years behind bars. They're expected to be sentenced, by the way, this spring. An attorney for Sears declining comment, while Elliott's lawyer did not immediately, you know, comment at all on the guilty pleas. But as far as Corporal O'Connor's widow, his families, they say they view Elliott's guilty plea as a good outcome. So this is the O'Connor's widow, Terry, speaking out after her husband's killer finally admitted all these, you know, I mean, it's nearly 5 years later by the time they're sentenced, and at least they get some closure, but says this was just so unnecessary to happen and to not have her husband come home.
I mean, it's a life sentence, but how is it not a life sentence, right? 50 to 75 years, or 50 and 75 years for the two individuals? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. If you remember this, you guys, it was her birthday. They had just celebrated her birthday the night before on March 12th. And then the very next day, or not even the next day, I mean, within like 8 to 10 hours, that's when she got the call that her husband had been killed in the line of duty. Huge story here in Philadelphia. And you know, Mrs. O'Connor, one of the families, when we talk about families, you know, behind the badge, her family's one of them. And so it's important to think about their family, what they're going through, and you know, we're there with them in spirit, certainly, as they digest the fact that at least they get some level of justice.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have a lot of other news of the day for sure, but I know that Nick and Greg are going to want to bust my chops over red dye. So we'll get into the red dye.
No, I think it's a good thing.
Okay, good.
Right?
Why are you for red dye?
No, I thought you guys were going to.
She's been saying.
I'm always, you know.
She's been saying for years.
What?
Red dye number 3, number 5, all of this stuff.
You know,
is,
needs to go.
Is killing
all
us.
All the yellow,
yeah.
Red.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Maha, baby.
Do
you,
yeah, baby.
Do you have, I mean, this is really, this is what I was talking about when I said, you know, it doesn't necessarily, I don't necessarily need RFK Jr. confirmed. I need this conversation to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact that he's in the zeitgeist of all of our conversations,
yeah.
I think that it's because of this that we're getting some change on this.
Yes.
Which is a good thing.
But I think the million-dollar question you have to ask yourself if you're against bans and you believe in personal accountability and responsibility is, you know, how far, what's the line of demarcation here where we kind of say, all right, well, where do we stop here? And we're going to ban this number and this color and that number. Or is it, hey, why don't you do your own due diligence and say, you know what, probably shouldn't put that garbage in my system.
So the FDA issuing the order, red, this is red number 3.
Yeah.
So I guess not all reds.
It's like
red
cherry. Well, not all reds. Yeah, I agree. Not all reds are great. Trust me. Select few reds.
Yeah. So it will be banned from food products as well as prescription drugs, ingested. They're calling it ingested drugs.
Yeah, because it's in some cough medicine.
Yeah,
stuff, right?
And it creates the cherry. It's, you know, the cherry color, your cherry soda.
Those gummy vitamins and stuff that you give, Jelly Belly.
Candy gum,
jelly
cookies.
Beans, which are delicious, by the way.
I housed about 8,000 of them during holidays.
I love Jelly Belly.
Betty Crocker sprinkles.
Yep.
Strawberry Ensure, to name a few. Candy.
Yep.
Candy corn? Brock's candy corn, for whatever reason.
I mean, have you ever seen the color of candy corn that is not...
Cancer corn.
Yeah.
It's trash. Candy corn is garbage.
It is.
Like, it's like, you guys, it kills me that they have come out, admitted that it causes cancer, and then, by the way, they banned it in lipstick, like, I don't know, in the 90s. And
is
then,
that right?
Yeah. So they, and in Europe, obviously in Europe, it's been banned forever. You know,
sure.
They never allowed. And so you have 2 years. They have 2 years to, I guess, get it off store shelves.
Okay.
You know, two years, it'll be banned.
Yeah, well, it's not something you can just do overnight, obviously.
Yeah. Well, we can all stop. If you are buying it, you just stop.
Yeah.
Pez.
But the production of any ingredient, right? Like now that stops immediately, right? It takes 2 years up to get it out of, you know, circulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Supply chains, stores.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is true.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me because, Nick, I know what you said about, you know, giving people their free will to do what they want, because that's me at the heart of everything I believe. But I also, it's just like, I this stuff is poison.
It is. And if it means having healthier kids and a healthier future.
I'm not.
Yeah.
That's the slippery slope.
Right.
That's where they get you. You know what I mean? Like, but it's for the children.
Right.
It's for the children. Or you can stop your son from eating Pez like mine does.
Give him broccoli spears.
Well, we are sponsored this morning by the Delaware County Office of Services for the Aging, COSA. Have questions about aging? The Delaware County Office of Services for the Aging, or COSA, can really point you in the right direction to see how COSA can help you or a loved one. Visit delcosa.org. COSA is supported by Delaware County Council. So delcosa.org. Thank you for sponsoring Killing Company News Live.
All right, Dawn, thank you very much. 6:18 on this Thursday morning. Let's get to another big take.
The Big Take on Kale and Company.
And it is brought to you by Wawa, Bondi, Pam Bondi, Law and Order. You know, if you came away from Tuesday's Senate confirmation hearings thinking that Pete Hegseth received an A+, then I don't know how you can't give Trump Attorney General nominee Pam Bondi of Florida the same grade after her performance on Wednesday. She is rock solid, strong, well-spoken, and fearless, and a track record. That should be no surprise to anybody who is watching who and what the state of Florida is cranking out in Republican politics. The list is endless. Donald Trump, Palm Beach, Governor Ron DeSantis, Tallahassee, established individuals like Marco Rubio and Rick Scott, up-and-comers like Byron Donalds, the current Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody. If Matt Gaetz was your prized possession? Well, I'm here to tell you that Pam Bondi, she's no consolation prize. She had a great day on the Hill yesterday as she faced the heat. And I think the days of lawfare are over in the United States of America. Out with Merrick Garland and his henchmen like Jack Smith, in with Law and Order and Pam Bondi. Here she is going to battle with Democrat Senator Sheldon Whitehouse on ending the weaponized DOJ and returning the department to its core mission statement. Listen and watch.
And it would not be appropriate for a prosecutor to start with a name and look for a crime. It's a prosecutor's job to start with a crime and look for a name, correct?
Senator, I think that is the whole problem with the weaponization that we have seen the last 4 years and what's been happening to Donald Trump. They targeted Donald Trump. They went after him. Actually, starting back in 2016, they targeted his campaign. They have launched countless investigations against him. That will not be the case if I am Attorney General. I will not politicize that office. I will not target people simply because of their political affiliation. Justice will be administered even-handedly throughout this country. Senator, we've got to bring this country back together. We've got to move forward, or we're going to lose our country.
And the truth is, there are way too many criminals in this country, domestic and or foreign terrorists, cartel members, MS-13, Chinese spies, and plenty of corrupt actors with sinister intentions. So let's focus on what matters. Pam Bondi is from Florida. I call it the F around and find out state. I feel very confident that she's going to be able to handle her business. And we know that Donald Trump can shoot from the hip verbally on a daily basis. What Trump says compared to what he does are two vastly different things. But people like Adam Schiff, they're always looking for a few words to run with and set off the fire alarms. Well, that's actually Jamal Bowman in real life, but I digress. Here is Bondi against Schiff yesterday talking about the alleged target next up on the list for Trump's administration, that being Liz Cheney. Listen and watch.
I'm asking you, sitting here today, whether you are aware of a factual predicate to investigate Liz Cheney.
Senator, no one has asked me to investigate Liz Cheney. That is a hypothetical.
The president has called for it publicly. You are aware of that, aren't you?
No one has asked me to investigate.
But the president has.
We're also worried about Liz Cheney, Senator.
The president has called
for this. You know what we should be worried about?
Ms. Bondi, please answer my
questions. California right now is through the roof.
Ms. Bondi,
your robberies are 87% higher than the national average.
My question is this.
That's what I want to be focused on, Senator.
Do you have the power to say no to the president?
How about that? Perhaps that slimeball Schiff can worry about the crime in his own state, or dare I even say that little old wildfire that's caused a bit of damage to the L.A. area? Just a suggestion, Adam. But Trump was victorious in 2024 because of many reasons. But protecting the vote, eyes on the ground, legal resources, poll watchers, holding the line, and staying in line. And people like Linda Kearns taking a vested interest in making sure that we have free and fair elections. Pam Bondi was grilled, I don't know why, but she was grilled about the 2020 election. And she spoke about what she saw right here in our own backyard of Pennsylvania. Listen and watch.
Do you have any doubts that Joe Biden had the majority of votes, electoral votes, necessary to be elected president in 2020?
You know, Senator, all I can tell you as a prosecutor is from my firsthand experience. And I accept the results. I accept, of course, that Joe Biden is president of the United States. But what I can tell you is what I saw firsthand when I went to Pennsylvania as an advocate for the campaign. I was an advocate for the campaign, and I was on the ground in Pennsylvania, and I saw many things there. But do I accept the results? Of course I do. Do I agree with what happened? And I saw so much. You know, no one from either side of the aisle should want there to be any issues with election integrity in our country. We should all want our elections to be free and fair and the rules and the laws to be followed.
In my opinion, there's absolutely no relevance to asking about the results of 2020, 5 years later, with an attorney general seeking to head up the DOJ, and whether or not you believe Joe Biden won legitimately. The Democrats' obsession over 2020 and J6 in interview settings is actually reaching mental health epidemic proportions. But I do know one thing. If any shenanigans occur moving forward in 2026 or in 2028, Pam Bondi and the Attorney General's office, I think they'll act accordingly. And I said yesterday on the show that I believe every single one of Trump's nominees will get through. The only casualty was Matt Gaetz. He was the sacrificial lamb. I told you Hegseth is in after his performance. I believe that'll occur. I think Pam Bondi is an absolute lock. But what about Tulsi Gabbard? What about Bobby Kennedy? Many have their doubts. I do not. And I feel even better about that prediction after educating myself yesterday, courtesy of CNN's Harry Enten. Listen and watch this great clip.
Look, all-time cabinet nominations withdrawn or rejected. Just 29 since the beginning of our...
The beginning of time?
Since the beginning of time, or at least the beginning of the time in the United States of America. Just 29. That's only about 3%. The only thing that's lower than that is Josh Allen's interception percentage. So the bottom line here, really clear, very few cabinet nominations are either withdrawn or rejected. Most get on through.
I think you just leave Josh Allen out of this.
I love Josh Allen. He's on my mind every day this week.
Very clearly. Okay, how often do they get rejected? I mean, if Donald Trump's slate of nominees stays as it is now, how many are going to get rejected?
I got to tell you, the odds on this are low. Really, really low. Okay, last cabinet nomination rejected. When the Senate was controlled by the opposition party, you got to go back to 89. Of course, that was John Tower, right? How about the president's party? You got to go back a century, all the way back to 1925. My father had me in his 60s. He was born in 1927, so this happened before my father was even born. My father lived his entire life without a cabinet nomination being rejected when the Senate was controlled by the president's party. So it really rarely happens. The idea that any of Trump's nominations will be rejected if, in fact, they face a Senate vote is basically nil.
How about that? Harry Enten was created by his father when his father was in his 60s. Explains so much. But a century, 100 years, you have to go back to 1925. We are now in 2025, since a president of one party who had control of Congress and the Senate didn't get somebody through via the vote needed. History tells us everybody left to go through the hearings is almost a mathematical certainty to get in. And if you think Pam Bondi is law and order personified, which I believe she is, you should feel even better about Kash Patel running the FBI. As Christopher Wray exits the office, we are getting a certified badass in Kash Patel. Pam Bondi goes to bat and dispels the notion that Kash would actually follow through with what he said when he claimed that he had a political prosecution hit list. Listen and watch this.
Senator, to cut to the chase, you're clearly talking about Kash Patel. I don't believe he has an enemies list. He made a quote on TV, which I have not heard. I saw your sign, or Senator Durbin's sign, about Kash. But I know that Kash Patel has had 60 jury trials as a public defender, as a prosecutor. He has great experience in the Intel Department, Department of Defense. I have known Kash, and I believe that Kash is the right person at this time for this job. You'll have the ability to question Mr. Patel.
And I'm questioning you right now about whether you will enforce an enemies list that he announced publicly on television.
Oh, Senator, I'm sorry. There will never be an enemies list within the Department of Justice.
No, there you go. Kash Patel, much like Donald Trump, he's advertising. He's flexing. He's sending a message. These Democrats that are grilling these people, they're not scared of what Kash Patel says. They want you to be afraid, as they instill fear in you, the American citizen. But the truth is, we lived a Biden presidency. Who prosecuted who? As well as a Trump presidency. Who did Trump's administration prosecute? Who did what? You can go back and compare them side by side for yourself. But they are scared of the outsiders, because the insiders of the swamp, they don't like the outsiders. And the cages are about to be rattled once again. And the left has the same playbook dusted off from 2016 at their disposal. I believe Bondi and Hegseth are in, as will be the rest. And that's the big take.
The Big Take on Kale and Company.
Brought to you by Wawa. Right now, Wawa rewards members can get a bonus offer for $1 any size hot coffee, or $2 for an iced coffee Or how about $3 for a Monster Energy 16 ounce? Not a rewards member? Now is the time to join. 855-839-1210 on social media at 1210 WPHT. And of course, your comments in the YouTube chat. We're back after this on a Thursday morning. Kale and Company.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and on the free Odyssey app.
Free live event at the Knack coming up this Monday. Get in line. Pitch a tent on the night before.
Pitch a tent.
I mean, let's think about this. The Eagles play at 3 o'clock on Sunday.
Yep.
Yeah, you watch the Eagles take care of the Rams.
Yep.
And then you load up your SUV, your truck, your vehicle. You get out to, Bucks County around, 7:30, 8 o'clock, and you camp out. You know, like a big sporting event.
I think a lot of people will be off on Monday, too.
Exactly.
So I think it's a good day. You know, come out here. They're bright and early. There will be breakfast served, coffee, tea, orange juice.
Yeah.
Anything you possibly want.
That's right.
There, so.
It'll be a good time. And we have 4 75-inch televisions to watch the inauguration.
Yep.
And I'm presuming and maybe one of the TVs, the show will be up, like the YouTube stream?
I was on a very big conference call yesterday discussing that.
Yeah.
See how we can use the TVs for the programs before the inauguration starts. And I believe we can.
So, okay. Very good.
Daniel Valdez will be out there with us to help us.
Daniel.
In the morning.
So. That's right.
Yep.
Little Danny boy.
Daniel and Anthony Dorenzo's in the building.
No.
Cyan. Yeah.
No, he's back too?
Yeah.
Are we putting the original associate producer staff of Kale and Company back together?
No, see, what happens is I train them, I discover them, and then other radio stations steal them.
And then they go on to bigger and better things.
That's what happens here. I'm the training ground for people. I discover talent.
See?
Interesting. And then everybody else is like, well, can we use them?
Oh.
Sure, no problem.
Do they at least give you Greg Stocker?
No credit.
A little credit?
No credit.
None. They leave Stocker for an extra dollar an hour.
I get zero credit for anything I do.
Those capitalistic pigs. Unbelievable. 855-839-1210. All right, we'll get to the Middle East here in just a moment. But, Don, let's get your thoughts. Pam Bondi's performance yesterday on The Hill. Again, you know, the questioning of 2020. And it's like, first of all, what's the relevance to it? Secondly, you know, this whole, like, oh, she's an election denier. Blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, okay. So's Hillary Clinton and Stacey Abrams. What's your point? Do you have any? If you can't attack somebody's record and their track record of their said profession, you have to resort to things from 4 or 5 years ago. I'm just going to guess, and I've never looked at, you know, her legal resume as she's been in the, you know, the Florida Attorney General's office, but I'm just presuming that she was really good at her profession. So what do you do when you can't rip somebody apart for what they're actually applying for? You hack at other ancillary things, right?
Yeah. I mean, I thought that she was amazing. She was poised. She's, you know, you can tell, unlike Pete Hegseth, who was, more compliant, right? And he never was triggered.
Mm-hmm.
She's a fighter.
Oh, she's, you know, a courtroom.
She's,
yeah.
You know, she's an attorney. She's at the top of her game. And so she's got this.
Mm-hmm.
And is she loyal? Yeah. Yeah, she's loyal to Trump. Good for her.
I'm watching her yesterday.
You know,
I'm like, wait a minute.
You go.
Why was she number two behind Matt Gaetz?
She wasn't. She was always the pick. Matt Gaetz, they were...
There are many who think that.
I'd like to think so.
They were just trying to give Gaetz a sweet deal so his creepy past wouldn't come out.
Right.
So he could save face.
Yes, of course, of course.
Yeah.
He was never going to be the attorney general. They were going to nominate him. He was going to step down. He was going to resign from Congress. The end.
Yeah. Yeah. And less baggage with Pam Bondi. And I think she will do a fabulous job. We'll see.
Loved her pinstripe suit.
Well,
she looked fantastic.
A lot of guys on social media loved a lot of things about Pam Bondi yesterday.
I mean, this is not an easy gig.
No.
This is not easy to get grilled by these individuals. It got nasty at times, but not personal necessarily.
Yep.
But I think, you know, I just think that they've got nothing. It would behoove Democrats to just be a little more boring, because these individuals, they're all going to, you know, Harriet and I loved
such a dweeb.
Watching on YouTube. By the way, he mentioned, I had to look up his dad. His dad was famous in New York.
Really?
In the Bronx. He was just known as the judge.
Oh.
And his dad was like a New York legend.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Harry Anton lays in the bathtub at night and thinks about Marv Levy and Jim Kelly and the Bills' glory days of the 90s. But that's just a guess of mine. You know, it's so weird too when you think about the two hearings that we have broken down publicly here the last couple of days. Is they went after Hegseth with personal matters. Mm-hmm. He remained calm. They went after Bondi on a professional level. She showed more willingness. I don't want to call it lack of discipline. I think it's just the courtroom prosecutor fighter in you. You have to have that in you, especially if you are a feisty law and order believer, not some, you know, DOJ hack or somebody, you know, that's Soros funded that wants to let criminals back out on the street. Like, if you believe in putting away bad people, you have to have that in you, especially as a female. I'm sure she's gone up against very wealthy, prominent defense attorneys that have a lot of money and a lot of resources. And, you know, I thought the way she handled it yesterday, you know, Trump talks about having fighters and he said, hey, Pete, be ready to fight. They're going to come after you. He really kept an even keeled temperament, whereas she was like, you know what? You're not going to steamroll me in public. Mm-hmm. And I like that about her.
Yeah, she's feisty. And to your very point, she gets away with it.
Mm-hmm.
As a female and yep. attorney, and right, you can. And not that she was like Kamala Harris, who used to, you know, do that kind of thing. But I do think, yeah, she, remember her?
No, yeah, I do, actually. Sadly, we do. We will never forget her. She will remain on the board for the duration of the show.
But I did. I loved it. I thought she was feisty.
Yep.
And fabulous.
Maisie Hirono, though, did make it a little personal.
I call her Hazy.
Is she back again?
Let's call her Hazy because Dan Borowski's wife is Maisie, so she's the lesser.
Cut 11.
Hazy Hirono.
Cut 11.
Here's the clip.
As part of my responsibility to ensure the fitness of all nominees, I ask the following two initial questions. First, since you became a legal adult, have you ever made unwanted requests for sexual favors or committed any verbal or physical harassment or assault of a sexual nature?
Harassment.
No, Senator. Have you ever faced discipline or entered into a settlement relating to this kind of conduct?
No, Senator.
Was there...
What?
Is there rumors or reports that she's?
No.
I think she asked everybody.
Okay.
Question.
So that's a very interesting set of questions that the representative from.
Have you ever made an unwanted request for sexual favors or committed any verbal or physical harassment or assault of a sexual nature?
Have you ever slept your way to? Have you ever been Joy Taylor from Fox Sports? I mean, like, what are we doing here? Is Hazy up for re-election? Is a lot Thank of spotlight you. On her the last couple of days, huh?
Well, because she asks the most bizarre and/or dopey questions, and she sounds hazy and thick in her speech.
Hazy.
Pam should have said no, but in my life, I've certainly been sexually harassed, so I just showed him your picture.
Wow! Dude, Dawn coming out for fastballs today. I like.
But I'm pumped.
There you go. All right, so let's get to the Middle East. Right, Dawn gave us the developments in the late night hours last night. We had a last minute holdup with the Israel-Hamas ceasefire. Hostages will be released. You know, this deal was released and reached. I'm just going to read you a couple of the excerpts. A lot of the stuff you heard from Dawn about 40 minutes ago in the news. This is courtesy of Fox when it came down yesterday. Israel, and I still think this will happen in the next couple of days. It's probably something that's just, you know, last minute, posturing on these two sides. But Israel and Hamas reached a ceasefire deal that also ensures the release of hostages. Fox News has confirmed. President Joe Biden, joined by Vice President Kamala Harris and Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Remember, no H in there. It's Antony, not Anthony. Held a press conference Wednesday morning announcing that the deal would, quote, roll out in three phases. Biden said the first phase will last 6 weeks and, quote, includes a full and complete ceasefire, withdrawal of Israeli forces from all populated areas of Gaza, and the release of a number of hostages held by Hamas, including women and elderly and the wounded. And I'm proud to say Americans will be part of the hostage release and phase one as well. And the vice president and I cannot wait to welcome them home. In exchange, Israel released hundreds of Palestinian prisoners, Biden said, and Palestinians can also return to their neighborhoods in all areas of Gaza, and a surge of humanitarian assistance into Gaza will begin. Now, obviously, you had that late night development where Netanyahu is delaying to sign off on the cease deal, but the observations and takeaways that I have from when this story first came down yesterday is, first and foremost, I don't think this happens without you. you, the voter. You who voted for Trump that got him elected. Now, look, does Joe Biden get some credit? I think if you look at it objectively, you have to say he gets some credit. What percentage? I don't know. I don't care. But ask yourself this. Had Kamala won? Does this happen? I say no. She's weak. She's incompetent. She's not respected. And I, you know, well, but Nick, you know, he wanted the, this wasn't Joe working hard to hand Kamala, should she have won the election, a boost to say, hey, as you begin your term as president, prisoners, hostages released. He hates her. He was not doing anything to help her had she had won the election and defeated Trump. But the reality is this. They had 15 plus months, and one could only imagine how many lives have been lost in these 15 plus months. I do think this is happening in part because of Trump. Again, don't know the percentage, don't know how much is Trump, how much is Biden. But when you come out and you say there will be hell to pay if these people are not out in 5 days or in however many days when I take the Oval Office back, because the reality is this, Trump had peace in the Middle East, right? This didn't happen under Trump's watch. This happened under Biden's watch. You know, nobody was paragliding into a music festival and killing 1,200 innocent, you know, people just trying to have a good time. You look at Trump, you could say he's feared, he's respected domestically and internationally by billionaires, whether left or right or center, Bezos, Elon Musk, the AI CEO guy that's going to be out there, Sam, what's his face, global leaders around the planet. So to me, that when Trump won the election, the writing was on the wall that this thing was going to come to an end pretty darn fast. And I hope, and I'd like to think the same applies with Russia, Ukraine, and we will see about that. But Dawn, your thoughts, reaction, because I know we did get developments late in the night. Do you think this is still going to come to fruition? And how do you juggle the always interesting game of, well, who deserves the credit?
Well, first and foremost, thank God there. And even though I know there's this last minute glitch and this morning, they're still working things out. But I think it's, you know,
they're saying that not Netanyahu wants to delay the vote, right?
Well, mm-hmm. So the question is also, because we know that Netanyahu is supported by Trump. We know that when Biden-Harris kind of blew him off when Netanyahu, who was visiting here, Trump invited him to Mar-a-Lago, etc. So there are some, by the way, especially on the left, saying, oh, this is Netanyahu delaying this.
You know, Trump is officially sworn in.
So the release happens after, and then you can say it was technically on Trump's watch.
Yeah, but I would hope that, and I think Trump would say, just do this now. Just get this done ASAP.
Mm-hmm. This is so reminiscent of 1981 with the Iranian
hostages. Reagan, yes.
Reagan, and they had the split screen of him being sworn in and the Iranian hostages coming home.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that's, so everybody, you know, you're right, Greg, that everybody's making, look, I don't care who gets the credit. This is, you know, to be, more than 400 days in this cave, and for the people that, the hostages who were freed and they were emaciated and in the darkness, and mm-hmm. what a horrible situation.
Yep.
So I just thank God, you know, for the day that they're released. And also, you know, the fear is that at least a third are, you know, not alive.
Right.
So for the families, just to have closure on this,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can't even imagine what hell they've gone through. So
I agree.
Let's just get it done.
We'll hear a couple of clips here in just a moment. But the Times of Israel, timesofisrael.com, with a story yesterday with the headline, Arab officials, quote, Trump envoy swayed Netanyahu more in one meeting than Biden did all year. That according to the Times of Israel. And officials on the Arab side giving these quotes. And then, of course, you look here with the newspaper in the United States, the New York Times, right after Trump wins the election, they had a column with the headline, Trump's win is likely to prolong Gaza talks and the uncertainty. They write, any major progress on a ceasefire will probably have to wait until after January's inauguration, analysts said. Gazans said they were divided about whether Mr. Trump would do much to stop the war. You can see the headline and the graphic from the New York Times on YouTube. Thank you very much, Phil. So let's get to a couple of clips here. This is, let's go with K4. This is a little montage. You're going to hear Joe Biden yesterday, followed by Trump from a handful of days ago, talking about the credit and the demands that were made. Whether Biden gets the credit, whether Trump gets the credit, let's listen to this and watch this clip. Phil, K4, please.
Thank you. Folks, credit for this, Mr. President, you or Trump?
Is that a joke? Oh, thank you.
Not a joke.
If those hostages aren't back, I don't want to hurt your negotiation. If they're not back by the time I get into office, all hell will break out in the Middle East.
Can you elaborate?
And it will not be good for Hamas. And it will not be good, frankly, for anyone. All hell will break out. I don't have to say anymore, but that's what it is.
So there you have it. Joe Biden yesterday, as he walks back to the podium and makes that snide comment, Kamala there with that grin on her face. Boy, what a couple they are. And then, of course, Trump at the bottom there, if you were watching on YouTube from last week. But even Biden, go ahead, Don. Go ahead.
January, I was just trying to insert it, January 7th.
Yep. And then yesterday you had Biden's own State Department as they gave some credit to Trump for the Israel-Hamas ceasefire deal. An hour after, Joe tried to give credit to himself, which is the clip that we just played for you just a moment ago. Phil, this is K3, please.
When it comes to the involvement of President-elect Trump's team, it has been absolutely critical in getting this deal over the line. And it's been critical because, obviously, as I stand here today, this administration's term in office will expire in 5 days. And one of the things that we have always said about this deal is that when you get from stage one to stage two, that the United States, Egypt, and Qatar are the guarantors of this deal. And Egypt and Qatar will push Hamas to stay at the bargaining table and to get from stage one to stage two, and the United States will push Israel to stay at the bargaining table to get from phase one and phase two. So obviously those are promises we cannot make on behalf of the United States for any longer than the next 5 days. And so it's critical that all of the parties to the agreement and the other mediators see that when the United States is in the room making commitments, those are lasting commitments that extend beyond this administration into the next one. I would just say, lastly, I don't know if it's unprecedented to have envoys from an outgoing and an incoming administration sitting at the same table negotiating a ceasefire agreement of this kind. But if it's not unprecedented, it's certainly unusual. And we, of course, thank the Trump team for working with this on this ceasefire agreement. We think it's important that they were at the table.
All right, so let me ask a question that I don't think I've heard asked since this developed yesterday. And you heard him there talking about, you know, the rarity, certainly not completely rare, but it's not common where you have the outgoing administration and the ingoing, and obviously tension between the two administrations, you know, a competitive dislike, perhaps even a personal dislike. Is this a sign of working together? Is this a sign of unity, or is this a sign of, hey, Trump's trying to one-up Biden, and Biden trying to get this done before Trump comes in so he can't take the credit? Because ultimately, and Don, I think you nailed it, and you said it really well, is I don't ultimately care who gets the credit. What I care about is people being released, specifically, and nothing against Israeli hostages, but I want those American hostages home. That's ultimately my number one priority, and I think you said it quite well.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't think they're working together, but in that respect. But I do think if you are in this administration, you're right there front and center living this and thinking, and you know, and are briefed of the details of especially what these hostages are going through, the hell you've heard from the families and what six of them Americans and as well the pressure to get this ceasefire done.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, if you're involved in that, and I think it was gracious and classy that anybody within the current administration would talk about that, that really it's a win worldwide. Because think about what the world sees. The world sees two administrations and the incoming administration, Trump sending his best guy, Steve Witkoff, who, by the way, is a billionaire. I guess maybe he's another oligarch. I'm not really sure. But Steve Witkoff, I looked him up last week when, you know, you played that trip and that clip, and Trump was up there at the podium getting interrupted by biased reporters, and he looks over and he goes, oh, they're walking in with Eric, there's Steve, and talks about how there's nobody better than Steve Witkoff in these types of negotiations. And so that's just it. You know, it just shows you that they needed Trump's guy. They needed Steve Witkoff to pressure Israel on that side. Like, you need the pressure from all sides to say, no, 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 this is, we got to get this done.
Yep.
And I never, I'll be honest, I didn't really think of that until last week when, you know, when Trump said that. And even then yesterday, that part of the problem here was the hesitance of trust by the Israelis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they, you know what I'm saying? I think they trust the Trump team more than, okay, this is real, and they're going to hold the feet to the fire type thing, as far as that they're going to make sure the ceasefire, that nobody reneges on anything.
Hard to believe this all started on October 7th, 2023. Here we are, January 16th, 2025, and we have seen so much. You know, we've seen the protests, we've seen the college campuses, the Ivy Leagues, we've seen the reports of the numbers of the rise of anti-Semitism in the country, and here we are, you know, 16 months later, and we're on the doorstep of perhaps closure temporarily, because, again, it's the Middle East, and they've never gotten along, and they never will.
It's biblical.
Yep. 855-839-1210. Hour two on the way. Dawn will have some news to kick off hour number two. First, Carrie Underwood. Now the Village People.
YMCA.
Back after this.
Start your day with Kale and Company. Weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.